We'll now go ahead and move into the Q&A session. We do have just a few questions typed in, but I do encourage, we have plenty of time, so I encourage people to keep typing in questions. I'll just go up to the top. So Will and Paul, the first question for you is, how many members are on your Freight Stakeholder Advisory Group?
Well, there's 10 permanent members, but there's also, between 5 to 10, I would say, regulars from various freight sectors that, continuously come and are invited. So usually at a meeting we'll have, between 20 and 30, maybe 20, 25 private sector participants. But actual members of the FSAC are 10, and those were really kind of carryovers from even back from 2006. So they've been with us for quite some time.
All right. The next, it's more of a comment, but Will and Paul, I'll just put it out for you just if you have any comments to respond. Another sector to consider on a freight advisory committee is the military. And this person said, for our MPO, we have a military representative on our committee because they have a very large military presence. Any thoughts from any of the presenters about that?
And Jennifer, the thing I would say is that, yeah, I mean, it really depends, and in mind you, this is an MPO as opposed to a state, but it really, the kind of representation you want to have in your committee is really dependent upon who are the major, who are the major carriers, who are the major freight producers, that's not necessarily the best term for it, but shippers, manufacturers, whatnot, within your region, that they play a significant role or have significant freight transportation needs within your state, or if you're talking about MPO and MPO. And in some areas, the military is going to play a significant role in terms of the amount of goods movement that's actually taking place within the region. So I think that's in certain regions, that would definitely be appropriate.
All right, thanks, Chip. Another question for Chip, Paul, and Will. Given that freight transportation can be a significant contribution to air pollution and greenhouse gases, how are or how could state freight advisory committees interacting with state transportation conformity planners and consulting with state air quality agencies? This could be particularly important for development of performance measures. So, Paul or Will, any thoughts on that?
I'm going to say that we do have a presence with the governor's climate action, and I'd say there's a bit of a cross-pollination that goes on between what we are doing with freight initiatives and that. I'm not absolutely a air quality expert, or I'm nowhere near an air quality expert, but we do have a presence on the governor's board, and it's probably one of those issues where I could dig and get you some more information. It's just not readily available to me here today.
All right. Chip?
I'm not sure how to best answer this question. I think what I would say is a couple different things here, and it may not necessarily answer your question, Dan, but what I say is that if you want to have, different state transportation conformity planners or state air quality agencies involved in the committee, I think that if you feel that's appropriate, that would definitely, that's something you could do. I don't think there's anything wrong with that in terms of having them involved on the committee. One thing I will say, though, or one thing I'll add, is that I know that there are different carriers, and usually it tends to be the larger carriers, whether it's truck carriers or, on the railroads, railroads and some of the larger truck carriers in particular, that they're looking at different ways to reduce their environmental footprint in terms of reducing their emissions, whether it's with trucks, especially short-haul trucks, doing using some sort of alternative fuels or hybrid vehicles or electric vehicles, or with railroads. One of the things they've had is they call the genset locomotives, which are basically reduced power locomotives in a rail yard that don't consume as much diesel. So there's different efforts that are going on with carriers that are in terms of trying to reduce emissions. So And I realize that doesn't, that second part doesn't really answer your question, but there are different things that are going on in terms of, and that's something that can be discussed, I think it's worth discussing, or can be worth discussing with state free advisor committees in terms of some of the, whether it's with other fellow public sector agencies in terms of trying to improve air quality, or some of the efforts of the actual private sector, especially the carriers, what they're trying to do to improve their or reduce their emissions, improve their environmental footprint.
Thank you. Next question for Will and Paul. Does Maryland have formal bylaws for committee and membership?
We do not have any formal bylaws for committee membership. So I guess, you know, that would be one thing to keep in mind, obviously. But we've been able to be flexible with that because we don't have any rules or bylaws. So.
Okay. Next question also for you. How do you integrate input regarding highway projects into your agency highway investment plan?
By a highway investment plan, I'm going to assume this is capital programming process, and not that we have a particularly complex system here in Maryland, but we have a long history of needs that have been identified, and as Sharon mentioned, since 80% of our budget has lately gone to maintenance activities, we haven't been spending a whole lot on new initiatives. But what I will say is that our local elected officials have a major say in priorities. In fact, they will dictate their priorities with formal announcements, letters to the department of which next project the department will be working on. If this question goes more to selection of freight projects, I will say that our state highway administration has developed its own freight implementation plan with an inventory of projects that are truly identified as freight projects to kind of as a candidate list. And these projects continue to be vetted, and we even use our freight stakeholder advisory committee to engage in that discussion and give further emphasis to different freight priorities. But it still comes down to what the local elected officials have dictated to us and the availability of funds to start those projects.
All right, thank you. Next question also for both of you. Do you have any advice on how to inspire a state DOT to make their state freight advisory committee more active or transparent? I'm thinking of situations where the group was formed as part of the process of creating a state freight plan, but then not kept active or visible since.
Well, I think we probably had that same experience. After we achieved our initial goal of getting our freight plan up and running, we kind of went into the doldrums with engaging the committee. But there's been a re-energizing, if you will. It's certainly freight recognized as a priority here within the Maryland Department of Transportation. And it's just a renewal that we have this valuable resource in having this committee up and running. And like I say, since we have folks who have remained with us since 2006, like Sharon, it has just given us, since we now have an actual freight office here in the department, so it's given us a new emphasis to just engage these folks or re-engage them. Like I say, there are plenty of things to talk about, and our just interchanges across these conference tables have proved very beneficial. So I can't give you a hard and fast recommendation to put a spur in anybody's transportation department to get this on. It's just here, it's just an internal recognition that we have a great asset and we want to continue to use it.
And this is Will. I would also add that, you know, leveraging actually what's going on federally can help kind of spur that. You see that with MAP 21, there are freight provisions where before MAP 21, it wasn't that top of mind. Also, using other federal things that are going on, like in Congress with the House Transportation having this special freight panel, using updates from that as a way to kind of spur either people within your DOT or just the private sector, and your previous outreach attempts with the private sector as a way to bring people back together, either formally or informally, would be a good way to reach out to them, or a good excuse, for lack of a better term, to reach out to them and reconnect.
All right, thank you.
Jennifer, I actually have a comment with regard to that question. You can scroll back up there and see it again. What I would say is to Abby, with your question, is I think it's important for, and mind you, I'm speaking very generally, and I think our Maryland representatives on this webinar, they're giving you a little more specific responses, which I think are, good and very important to keep in mind. I'll give more of a general response. I think it's important for the state DOT, assuming it's the state DOT that's, conducting the state freight advisory committee, it's important that the state thinks about what are its freight goals, the issue of, what different issues are occurring with freight in the state, whether it's, truck traffic or truck parking or, intermodal facilities or, port growth or whatever it may be, thinking about what the state's freight goals may be, thinking about what some of the other public sector groups that are on the committee, what are their goals, the groups that are not, not private sector, but other public sector, non-state DOT groups, what are their goals in terms of, trying to address freight transportation? And finally, what are the private the carriers? What are the shippers? What are the private sector, those who actually do freight transportation on a daily basis? What are their goals in terms of addressing needs? I mean, the issues of congestion, the issues of, having sufficient, whether it's roadway capacity or roadway design or, appropriate facilities located in appropriate locations, thinking about what are the needs that the different participants have? And I think the other thing I would add is that I think it's important, in terms of trying to engage, and this is easy, in some ways it's something that's sort of obvious, but you have to keep it in mind, is keeping in mind that freight transportation is really a critical component of economic development. I mean, that's something that if we didn't have, we didn't have our highway system with trucks being able to operate on the roads and the railroads being able to ship goods and the marine carriers and air cargo and pipelines, if we didn't have that, our economic vitality would be negatively impacted. And I think that's important to keep in mind also in terms of trying to think about, and trying to continue to have a state freight advisory committee and keep it engaged.
All right. Thank you, Chip. Next question. Do you reimburse any travel expenses for members or serve lunch, dinner, et cetera, have expenses with your meetings?
We do not.
That's the advantage of being a small state.
Yeah.
Now I think it's generally been budget cutbacks and all that sort of thing. So if we have a carton of coffee and a dozen donuts, to me, we're doing well lately. But we do not reimburse travel and meals.
All right. And how do the MPO and RPO groups fit into the advisory committee or the internal freight advisory committee?
We don't have a formal inclusion process for the MPO. BMC is the Baltimore MPO, the Baltimore Metropolitan Council. The department is in regular contact with them. We have had individual members, I think, serve on the past. We don't currently have a BMC member on the committee. But we collaborate pretty much on every venture we take, and they're certainly included in the committee meetings and invited to them. And like I said, I believe we have had a BMC staffer on the committee in previous years, but we just don't have one currently.
This is Jim Cheatham. Let me just add a little bit to that also, that on the flip side of that, the MPOs, in particular the large, very large ones, probably have their own freight advisory committees. I know some, and there's some consultation with that and then working through that with the state. So it also works that they will have a keen interest for how freight flows through their areas and then as they consult with the state in terms of what the state advisory committee is said. So keep that in mind as if you're in certain areas, and most of them do probably, or probably here in the near future, will start to certainly look and consider how freight works within their own boundaries.
Yeah, and this is Chip Millar. I just want to, and I concur with what Jim just said, that in many cases an MPO may have its own committee, and I would say in general, in terms of, you know, having that coordinate, it's really, you know, I'd say partly it's broader coordination that ideally does take place between the state DOT and MPO, and then the MPOs can participate, you know, in the state committees if so chosen. I mean, I'll speak from my own personal experience. Prior to coming to Federal Highway Administrations, I worked for the Harrisburg MPO, and obviously Harrisburg is, those of you who are familiar with a little bit of geography, that's the state capital of Pennsylvania. So I had an opportunity to deal with a lot of PennDOT initiatives, and PennDOT is pretty good, quite frankly, Pennsylvania here, pretty good in terms of outreach to, you know, different entities, including the MPOs, in terms of trying to have that participation. But I think it really varies, and I think part of, like what Jim just said, of having the MPOs actually, you know, having their own committees as a way of addressing freight needs. The states can definitely have, the MPOs can provide a perspective that's, you know, in terms of a little bit, you know, more localized perspective. Sometimes that's important when you're looking at a state freight advisory committee, especially if you're talking about, I'll say, more like land use impacts or more localized impacts that occur in an area. You know, it's not necessarily, as mentioned with Maryland, I mean, it's not something that's necessarily required, but it can be helpful. So, you know, and it really, it's a matter of how much input, you know, and how much interaction that the state would like to have, and, you know, in terms of having the MPOs involved.
All right. The next question I will ask Paul and Will first in terms of Maryland's experience, and then Jim and Chip open up to you. But the question is, have state freight advisory committees been used to help select freight studies or projects, and what are the outcomes of this level of involvement?
I'll say mostly, you know, getting back to our funding issues and our capital program, most of our major projects have legs, they've been around, and we're poised and ready to go. I'm really talking about highway widenings and major capacity improvements, that type of thing. But also, membership on our committee, an important member is the Maryland Motor Truck Association. We have a terrific problem with truck parking in the state, and these folks have been invaluable in determining where we should be looking, investigating, and locating new truck parking facilities. So that's one example where we get direct input on the committee. There have been other projects related to our railroads. A major project here in the city was the intermodal container facility. This was a CSX initiative to offload containers and get them to a rail line that had double stacking capacity, because we have issues with that in Baltimore, height restrictions. So we've had representation from CSX on the committee, and you know, that was a major, I won't say the FSAC did it, because it was a major political process to get that project completed, but there was certainly an exchange of information and a general you know, awareness made known to the committee of what was going on, what was happening, what kind of decisions were being made. So, won't say they have direct decision making, but it's certainly their information that they supply gets fed into the system, and we work it out that way.
Yeah, I would agree. This is Jim, and I would agree with that. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the actual decision is made by the state or the MPO, whoever, but they may in turn have listened to the advice of certainly, you know, the Freight Advisory Committee, and have a great deal of some input to that. But the actual decision of how far they move along and what they do is probably certainly what the states will handle.
Yeah, this is Jim Lardo, and I actually had referenced in my presentation where there could be providing direct input. And the example that I had in mind Andrew, was that, and I'm familiar with this, again, from my previous time working in Pennsylvania, and I was fortunate enough to attend at least a couple different occasions the Freight Advisory Committee that the Philadelphia MPO, DVRPC, has. And I remember one of the meetings I attended, they had some different studies that they were going to, they identified as potentially funding, within the DVRPC region, which covers nine counties, I think it's nine counties, five in Pennsylvania and four in New Jersey. And they allowed the opportunity for all the committee members, and in fact, all the people who were actually at that meeting, to select their top, I think it was a particular meeting I was at, their top three choices for which projects they thought were most appropriate to fund, you know, in terms of these studies. And so I when I participated in that, I thought that was really a good idea, because it provides, it's like, hey, we talk about, you know, there's different things that are going on, we talk about these needs, and now you're providing an opportunity for committee members to really provide some feedback about what really are the primary needs in this case it was in the MPO region, but that could be applicable at the state as well. Having said that, I will note, following up with what Jim said and what I think it was what Will or Paul said, is that, you know, a lot of the major projects have been identified, you know, by the state, you know, in terms of highway projects and whatnot. And but still, there could be some potentially, I'm guessing, I think there could be potentially some freight feedback on some of those projects. I think probably it's not going to be, I'm guessing, in many cases, not dramatically different, but there still could be some opportunities.
Great. Thank you. The next question, Chip, I think you have the answer right in front of you there. Does FHWA have a count, and how many states have formal state advisory groups?
Yes, we actually have, and mine is slightly dated, we have 2011. We do internally, working with our field offices, or what we call our division offices, or more specifically the Freight Council, did in 2011, most recently, a state freight assessment in terms of state freight advisory committees and established committees or task group at the state level that meets regularly with public and private sector interests. And at that time, there were 13 states that indicated that they did have a committee and four that were in progress. And since that that survey was conducted in 2011, it was actually conducted, I should note, it was done by the division offices. They reached out individually to their state counterparts, so it was actually done by the division offices in terms of responding. But since that was conducted, we've had at least two other states, Texas and California, that have initiated state freight advisory committees since then. So roughly speaking, and I should note the division offices include District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, so roughly speaking, somewhere on the order of roughly, I guess it's about 30%, 35% of the states do have some sort of committee that is in place, or is in progress at least.
All right, thank you. Paul and Will, how closely does your Freight Advisory Committee work with economic development agencies in the state?
Well, I thought I'd probably, you know, get myself in trouble for saying some things that may be inaccurate, but our Department of Business and Economic Development, I would say, first and foremost, probably has a marketing accent to it. And we interface with them probably on a project basis, mostly if we're affecting a growth area or, you know, a particular concern they might have, redevelopment, and then it might bump into a port-related activity or something along those lines. But in terms of our committee, there hasn't been much interface with the economic development group. It's kind of comes up on an as-needed basis and more on a project basis. If there's transportation-related piece of property that maybe people have competing interest in and what they'd like to see the property used for, we'd like to see it for a freight purpose, that's where that interface would come in. But generally on the daily operations of what we do here, I mean, and certainly with committee related activities, we just don't have that much relationship with them, so I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
And if I hear anything from the business and economic development people, I'll be sure to share that with you in the future.
All right. Thank you. Next question for you. What freight goals has Maryland achieved that can be attributed to the Freight Advisory Committee? What projects have been delivered, and has this process accelerated the delivery?
Well, certainly their input to the actual freight plan has been, a very positive benefit. I think in a lot of operation stuff, it's just increased our awareness. As I mentioned, the parking issues have been of great importance to the motor truck community. We did establish a truck parking lot, or a truck overnight lot on I-95 south of Baltimore. And that probably is a good indication of where the committee was able to help us and focus our energies. That is one example of a concrete project we got on the ground. And at this point, again, it's just if you want to translate their input into projects, that's difficult to do given the budget constraints. But it's really the body of information that we're getting from them. Certainly, we get to hear, too, about policy-level things, starting with the costs of operating trucks in the state with the increase in gas tax, the increase in tolls. All that just feeds into the overall body of knowledge that we picked up from them.
Okay. The next question, I guess first I'll start with Paul and Will, if Maryland has added any bike ped alternative mode stakeholders to the membership of the committee, and then open it up to Jim and Chip if you're aware of any other states that have done so.
We have not added any bike ped or alternative mode stakeholders to the committee at this time. I don't know. Maybe Paul can.
Now, I won't say there have been any advocates approaching us either that have a bike ped interest in freight movement. And
one issue is that in selecting members, a lot of it is we reach out to the other departments, and also as we kind of talked about, it's how much interaction we've had with these people before. And that just hasn't been something that anyone has brought to us. So for right now, that just hasn't been identified as anyone stepping up to want to be a part of it.
I would say if the questioner could elaborate on where you're going with the question. I'll just leave it at that. We haven't had much interest from the bike ped community.
Yeah, this is Chip. I was just going to say that I would concur that at least in my sort of being aware of what's been going on, knowledge about state freight advisory committees that are out there, and also my previous somewhat indirect experience with state freight advisory committees and FMR MPO committees, is that typically with bike ped, they're not involved directly. What you do have is sometimes you'll have committees, whether it's at the state level or it could also be at the MPO level, but you'll have committees that are very focused on bicycle and pedestrian transportation needs. But it would normally be a separate committee in terms of addressing those needs. One thing I'll actually sort of turning in a little bit different direction, I don't mean to put Will or Paul on the spot, but I guess with public transportation, has there been any sort of involvement from, because especially in Maryland with Maryland Transit Administration's their commuter rail operating, and two of the three commuter rail lines operating on freight rail lines, like they're both CSX lines, has there been any involvement in that regard in terms of You know, from talking about alternative transportation, I look at public transportation as potentially being part of that as well. And I'm just wondering, that's, I'll say in general, that's something where there, where you do have shared access on rail in some sort of manner. That could be an opportunity, or that could be where there may be a little bit of, you know, different, you know, somebody from public transit that's involved potentially in the committee. But I don't know, you know, specific examples. But I don't know if that's the case in Maryland or not.
Yeah, we have our MARC system, our Maryland commuter line, operates on both the CSX as well as the Northeast Corridor. Now, the Northeast Corridor provides Norfolk Southern with overnight freight use. Both railroads, CSX and Norfolk Southern, are, you know, are freight companies, and that's what they've put their accent on. And in fact, Maryland has operating agreements with both to operate the commuter line. And, you know, without getting really into the weeds with all that, it's a detailed negotiation about numbers of trains and times of operation that, that all these conflicting uses come into play. So, I mean, there could be room for discussion with that. Although, you know, those discussions take place between our MTA and the two railroads, on a very regular basis. Could be a question of whether our advisory committee is the forum for all that. But, you know, for an informational type of item, it certainly could get an audience from the committee. So that's about all I can say to that.
And just following up on that question, Roseanne, who asked the question, mentioned that the Oregon DOT has begun discussions with their freight advisory committee about adding a bike ped member to help facilitate better discussions and needs. Here's a question for all speakers. What, based on feedback you've experienced, have been benefits expressed by the private sector freight advisory council members? So, Paul and Will, I'll put that to you first. And Sharon, I'm sorry. I apologize about that. And Sharon, actually, Sharon, you probably would make the most sense to answer that first.
Thanks, Jennifer. I kind of touched on it in my presentation, but a lot of the value we found in the committee, as Paul alluded to earlier, it's the free flow of communication and it's the ability to have a lot of constituents at that table exchanging views. But for us personally, we've gotten a better understanding of freight trends and how they may impact our business. It's given us a better understanding of the resources available to support our freight network, such as what resources MDOT has, economic development has, and some of the other agencies in the state. But last and not least, it gives us an idea of what other public and private stakeholders are doing to address their freight concerns so that we can kind of study those, kind of digest them, and figure out if there's ways we can adopt best practices in our own business.
All right, thank you. And Paul and Will, have you heard feedback from any other members?
Well, probably not as succinctly as Sharon put things. I'd say we hear from our trucking people most of all. And, you know, we do get input regularly from the two major railroads. So I'll say yes, it's working in that capacity.
All right. Jim or Chip?
And this is Jim, and I would agree with both them and that I think the big piece, other part of that is they now have, it gives them a voice. They can also now also learn what direction maybe the state or the MPO is proceeding or looking at. So they have a voice in how things go, I think would be the other important factor in this.
All right. One more question. In Maryland, how has the Freight Advisory Committee interacted with advisory committees from surrounding states?
I'll just say there's been a kind of a upper level, you know, conversations. We haven't really had too many discussions or traded representation, which is, you know, probably a good suggestion for us to wangle an invitation to Delaware, Pennsylvania, and find out what we're doing. But to be honest with you, we haven't had a ton of interaction other than some meeting announcements, project announcements, whatever public hearings are going on. So it's been more or less at a public announcement sort of level thing. But I'll take it as a suggestion that it'd be good to trade information with them, more so than what we're doing now.
All right, thank you.
One thing I will note is that, and mind you, this is not something that would necessarily be done specifically at Maryland or for that matter some of the surrounding states, but there is in the Northeast Mid-Atlantic, there's the, actually along the entire East Coast, there's the I-95 Corridor Coalition, which the I-95 Corridor Coalition, I think it's primarily was formed really more so in terms of operations, which actually had a lot to do with, some of that had to do with freight truck movements. With more operations oriented, but it does have a strong freight component as it's evolved in terms of looking at freight transportation across the I-95 corridor, which is really the biggest highway corridor on the East Coast. And I know that there's some other similar efforts that are taking place around the country in terms of trying to have, it doesn't necessarily have a corridor name per se, but there are all different multi-state efforts that are taking place. It's not necessarily something I would say that's directly tied into an individual state's freight advisory committee, but there are efforts in terms of looking at multi-state freight issues.
And Nicole, who's now in the FHWA freight office, but formerly is with Maryland DOT, mentioned that reps from Virginia and Delaware have attended meetings in the past, and Delaware, Maryland, Virginia are now participating together in a regional freight study. All right. Well, I don't currently see any other questions. We do have a few more minutes, so if anybody thinks of anything else, feel free to type it in, but I would go ahead and start closing out, and I'll stop if I see another question come in. I do want to thank all five of our presenters today, and also thank you, everybody in attendance. The recording and the presentations will be available online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email to everybody who registered once they are available. The next seminar will be held on June 19th, and more information about the topic and a link to register will be available soon, and I'll send a notice out through the Freight Planning Listserv once it is available. The Freight Planning Listserv is the primary way to advertise upcoming Talking Freight seminars. It's also a way to learn about and share information on other freight topics. So if you haven't already joined it, I encourage you to do so. The slide is on the link to join is on the slide on your screen. I also encourage everybody to download the evaluation form from the box in the bottom right corner and fill it out and send it back to me so that we can try to make Talking Freight as best as we possibly can for the future. So doesn't look like we have any other questions, so we'll go ahead and end. So thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.